Hey, ladies. As women, we put our hearts into everything. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month, and it's time to focus on our heart health. Release the Pressure wants to help Black women look at self-care as an act of self-preservation. During High Blood Pressure Education Month, let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. That's iHeartRadio.com/RTP.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
It's The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert.
Ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors, my next guest is one of my favorite authors. Please welcome back to The Late Show, George Saunders. So, the new book of short stories here. It's called Liberation Day, first fiction collection you've done since your novel, Lincoln and the Bardo.
Yeah.
How do you decide what you're going to write? Because fiction is anything can happen.
Yeah.
After you write that novel, how do you decide what the next thing you're going to work on that's going to take years?
Yeah. For me, honestly, it's just, like, fun. If it's not fun, I don't want to do it. And the most fun thing is if you start a story and you don't know what's going to happen. So just to kind of confuse yourself in that way and then just see where it goes. Because the idea is if I know too well what I'm going to do and I just do that, that's a big buzzkill. Like this, Gerald Stern, his poet, said, if you I have to clean it up for TV, but he said, if you start out to write a poem about two dogs making love and you write a poem about two dogs making love, then you wrote a poem about two dogs making love. You know? So the idea is and Einstein was a little more classy. He said, no worthy problem is ever solved on the plane of its original conception. So the whole thing is you got to have a plan and then you got to be willing to abandon it. And for me, the story is a great form for that. It's always
when
so hard.
I started off in improvisation and sort of the idea there was discovery is better than invention.
That's perfect.
Is that together you'll discover something on stage that neither one of you could have invented.
Right, because otherwise you're kind of condescending. You know, you. If I have a story and I know what it is, and I just tell it. It ends up being a bit of a lecture, you know. It's like if you went on a date or something and you had index cards, you know, 7 p.m. ask about her mother. You know, I mean, you might do that because it's anxiety reducing.
Sure.
But in the end, it's not a relationship. So I love that, especially as I'm getting older, the idea that you're trying to make a really intimate communication with somebody you don't know, and you're kind of trying to think the best of them as you do that.
You write nonfiction, is it different, though? Because in nonfiction, are you going in with more of a clear intention?
Yes, but then the world will kick your ass. Because, like, I did a story where I drove the whole Mexican border from east to west. And I'm a liberal, left of Gandhi, basically, you know. So I knew what I wanted to be true. And then you go into the big, you know, crazy world, and it just says, nope, too simple, nope, too simple. So by the end, I came out in San Diego, and I was leaving, and these two beautiful border guards came riding down on horseback, you know. Oh, you're a reporter, yeah. What have you found out? And I told them, and they just dismantled everything I thought, you know. So in both fiction and nonfiction, for me, the goal is to get to the place where your usual judging mind has been quieted, you know? Mm-hmm. All your usual easy opinions just get reduced, and you're just in that kind of holy state of not knowing anything, which is, a sacred place, really, you know?
I had an opportunity to read a story of yours at Symphony Space recently called Love Letter, from a grandfather to a grandson. And it's placed in a somewhat fictional political environment where the grandson is asking for advice from his grandfather. Can you explain to the people, you have a very interesting story about how that story came about, and I think it speaks to that going into a place where you don't entirely know the...
Yeah, but first let me say, if you go to symphonyspace.org and watch this, because we know he's a national treasure, right? But that night, we were there, Stephen read the story, and at the end of it, there was this moment of complete, you could have heard a pin drop. that people were stunned. And then there was this thunderous wave of applause, and I was so grateful. I mean, I liked the story okay before you read it. But after you write it, like, oh, that's pretty good. But thank you. That was just such a generous, amazing.
Well, it was really my honor to read it, as I said. But what it makes it easy when it's a really good story, and mm-hmm. there's a very complex emotional intention for the character that you're mm-hmm. reading. And I'm curious about where that complexity of that story. If you could give a thumbnail sketch of what it's about.
Yeah, basically, it was before the 2020 election, and I was just feeling, you know, agitated and pissed. And mostly, I was feeling, are we really going to blow this thing? You know, this beautiful country that we've made by kind of mutual consensus. Are we really gonna let something so silly and comical, someone so silly and comical, bring it down? And it made me deeply sad. So I just did what I always do, which is I went into the writing room and I kind of typed up my sincere emotion. And then what I learned from Chekhov is you can write anything you want, but you have to attribute it. So I gave it to a grandfather. And the grandfather is writing kind of a letter of explanation or apology to his grandson, who's now living in this sort of autocratic regime. And he's just explaining, you know, here's how it happened. And what you want to happen in a story is that, it surprises you. So in that story, and you conveyed this so beautifully, he starts off saying, don't fight back. Just enjoy what you can. Just keep your head in the sand. And by the end of the story, he kind of talks his way out of it, you know. And now he's not so sure that he should be giving someone he loves that kind of passive, you know, advice to be passive.
I love short stories. I always have. How long is a short story? And that's a semi-serious question.
Yeah.
Because there's the short story that becomes the novella and the novella that becomes the novel. Do you know you're writing a short story when you start? And do you ever start a short story and go, you're a page in, you go, I'm done.
Yeah. That can happen. I've often started a story, and there's a kind of moment where a short story writer will go, this might be the novel. I think this is it, you know? And then you bloat it up for another 6 months, and you realize it actually was. So for me, I think, like, my little talent is kind of like a, you know, you take one of those toy cars and wind it up and then try to get it to go under the couch as fast as possible, just quick, you know?
But that's all it's going to do for now?
Yeah, I think so. I think 15 to 20 pages is kind of the idea, you know, but... who knows?
In one of your short stories in this, it's about an author, a writer, mm-hmm. is having writer's block. Do you suffer writer's block, or have you in the past? And if so, what do you do?
You know, the best thing I've ever heard on this was David Foster Wallace said that writer's block is always a case of having stupidly elevated expectations. You know, so you look at a blank page, I've got to be Tolstoy. You go for a walk, you know. But if you have gotten in touch with your own revision process, then you're never blocked. You just type some crap. That's a technical thing. You type some crap. And then if you have taste, you know, and if you believe in your taste and you go back to what you've written, you tune it up, you cut some stuff, you improve it, put it away, come back the next day. So for me, it's like doing that hundreds, maybe even thousands of times. And the really wonderful thing is if you're doing that, somehow the story gets smarter than you are. It gets wiser, it gets kinder, it gets funnier. So this guy, I'm not so crazy about, you know, but this, by the end of it, when a story is done, I feel like that guy is, I can live with him, you know? So, yeah.
You lived in Chicago. How long did you live in Chicago?
20 years, first 20 years. Years, yeah.
I lived there for 11 years. I mean, tons of the people who actually work on the show are Chicago mm-hmm. people, because a lot of people associate with improv from the show, and there's a big improv community there. I'm curious, what of Chicago exists in your work? Do you think people should recognize something about life or the ethos there?
I think there's a certain kind of sweet darkness in Chicago. I'll tell you the story I always think of. We had some neighbors. We didn't know them very well. But the woman's mother had passed away. So my dad goes to the funeral. I mean, we don't know him very well. But he says to her, you know, your mother lived to be 95. You know, she seemed to have a very long and healthy life. And the woman says, yeah, this is the sickest she's ever been. And the Chicago part is my dad came home, he's such a sweet man, and he came home with such a tender way of telling that story. Like, he had so much sympathy for her, and yet it was a really, really funny moment. So for me, that's Chicago in a nutshell, you know.
Well, George, lovely to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Liberation Day is available now. George Saunders, everybody. Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
Hey, ladies. As women, we put our hearts into everything. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month, and it's time to focus on our heart health. Release the Pressure wants to help Black women look at self-care as an act of self-preservation. During High Blood Pressure Education Month, let's help get to our goal of 100,000 Black women putting their hearts first and learn more about their heart health. Visit iHeartRadio.com/RTP for a chance to receive a $1,000 gift card to take care of yourself and prioritize your heart health. That's iHeartRadio.com/RTP.
CBS Sunday, After the Equalizer.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
It's the season finale.
Everyone's looking for something.
Of Tracker.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker, CBS season finale Sunday, After the Equalizer, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.